in life for free. But you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
Well, welcome back to Spikes and Jack. I'm Tom Out. She's AV and Lukovasenko on the board playing this song. She just wants some money, just the way she is.
That's what we think. Isn't it about money?
It says right here, she wants some money. She doesn't want the birds and the bees. Just saying, you know.
I want everything.
You say women want everything? Is that what you said?
Yes,
well, that's par for the course. Do we have Mr. Lou?
Доброе утро. Как вы поживаете?
Lou, how are you, buddy?
Good morning. I'm very well. I'm much like this intro to our previous one. This is a much more appropriate song for this collection of cutthroats.
Yes. We had a guy write in yesterday how he loves all the guests, especially Lou, or actually Kevin, Lou, and Carl. What side of the aisle do you think this guy's on?
The reality libertarian side.
That's just what I was thinking. I find that it's now that I'm in the middle and I can see both sides, I can see clearly both sides, I'm sort of appalled by the tyranny from each side and how similar they both are, even though they think they're not.
Well, Chief, you know that the political continuum, and I've mentioned this before, the political continuum, in terms of repressiveness anyway, is not a straight line, but a horseshoe. Because at the top, if you think of a horseshoe as pointing with the open end pointing up, at the top of the continuum is authoritarianism. And the far left and the far right both tend and end up in authoritarian states, regardless of, you know, whatever political ideology, you know, forms the basis for their beliefs. You see a repressive move from the left, and it's in my opinion, it's much more daunting from the left, because the left has the I'm starting to sound like Joe Biden. The left has most of the culture, mainstream press, Hollywood, academics, within its aegis. So when the left starts to repress, when the weight of the media, you know, Hollywood, cancel culture swings into action, it's much more significant than it is from the right, at least in this country right now.
Right now, I have to agree with you. Obviously, people. I've been a Democrat my whole life, Lou, up until recently, and I don't recognize this left. Where do they come from?
But this is the left. This is the left that, and I was talking to a friend of mine here yesterday, who was asking me, you know, how on earth I could vote for anybody but Joe Biden, and I said I said, first of all, I'm not going to vote for somebody who's mentally defective, and I want to talk about that for a few minutes. But I said the thing that bothers me about Joe Biden is not the fact so much the fact that I think he's fading very quickly. It's what I think he's going to enable, and the Democratic Party is swinging very far left, and you see some of this in these. Primaries. The primary results in Missouri. Tlaib and occasional Cortex prevailing in their primaries when initially I think they should have been primaried out by a responsible party. If you listen to some of the podcasts that are present with guys like the people on commentary, Podritz and some of these folks. One of the things that jumps out at you, by the way, and I don't know how you feel about this, but it appears that there is a very definitive sort of anti-Semitic trend or anti-Jewish trend in these folks that I find particularly disturbing, but that is also characteristic of an authoritarian, an authoritarian mindset.
Oh, it's incredibly anti-Catholic as well.
Yes. Well, anti-Catholic, anti-mainstream Christianity, very much so.
The stuff you normally would attribute to, I'm going to say, Democrats of my era, these people aren't that at all. I didn't know anybody.
No.
that I grew up to, they probably liked the fact that you went to church. They could care less which one it was, but they probably figured people were better off if they did. That was about as far as it got. I mean, obviously there was always somewhat of an anti-Catholic piece because we were so much of the ruling class in this country was Protestant forever. But it wasn't, certainly in Chicago you never felt that way because Chicago was predominantly Catholic. Yet there was there was people who were Protestant. I never said anything bad about them. And this is something different. And I don't quite get where it's all coming from. I mean, you're right. My concern with Joe Biden is that I don't think he can discipline the party. I don't think he's got any luck.
I want to explore this a little bit because you're starting to see now with this latest crazy outburst. And these aren't even, you know, John McCain type outbursts where the politician loses his temper in a kind of understandable way. These are mystifying, goofy outbursts that really do, at least in my opinion, remind me of people that I know who were in the middle of a significant mental decline in terms of capability and capacity. And this latest thing with the black, I believe he was an MSNBC reporter who, you know, was asking him about whether he was taking these cognitive acuity tests. And Biden's response is it's a confused, rambling response that indicates that he's not really in touch with what's happening around him. You know, he accuses the guy of, he says, look, you know, I'm not taking any of these tests, which, by the way, contradicts something he said in June. And then he said, you know, well, are you taking a drug test here? Did you have to take a drug test to get here? Are you some kind of a cocaine addict? And I mean, just manifestly inappropriate, but very reminiscent of the "you're a dog-faced pony soldier" remark that he made to that woman during the primary. And I mean, this is very reminiscent to me of the situation in Chicago right after I got there with the head of the Cook County Commission. John, and I've just dumped his name. I can't remember.
John Stroger.
Stroger.
Yeah.
And was kept alive in the hospital with the idea that, he's conducting business from his hospital bed. And in fact, he'd suffered a major stroke. It's probably doubtful he could even say his name. He certainly couldn't write his name. And, finally they figured out a succession plan. But the entire Cook County operation was basically being stage managed through a guy who was a major stroke victim, apparently totally incapacitated. I think this is what we're looking at right now.
Okay, but now
I wanted to talk about what that means.
Right. Well, I believe that there's a, first of all, I think what you're saying is absolutely correct. We're not supposed to ever agree, but I also think that to a certain extent, Trump's losing it.
I think that what you're seeing with President Trump, I mean, he's never been particularly artful in the way he answers questions. But I think what you're seeing with Trump is the exhibition of the petulance and the narcissism, not narcissism, but the personal prickliness and defensiveness that, quite frankly, Chief, it doesn't play well with him, but I'm amazed that he's tolerated the stuff that's been thrown at him so long.
No, I'm not talking about
major eruption.
What I'm saying is he 4 years in that job, especially the way he's gone about it. I mean, he's picked a bunch of fights and people have fought back, and some have picked a fight with him and he's fought back. But I mean, it's the wear and tear on the man has got to be dramatic. And I've seen in the last 3 or 4 months. Like I said, I'm becoming an observer. I mean, he's becoming, I think if any, he'd be doing the same thing I'm doing. I think he's not a young man anymore.
No.
I'm saying, well, I guess my question is, on both sides, what if the Democrats decide we can't prop this guy up. We can't keep him hidden.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about first how we got here, and then I want to talk about what the options are going forward. And I think it's clear. The comments about him looking bad and looking much different from the Joe Biden that was the vice president and left office in 2016 started well, you know, early on in the primaries.
Matt Weber is his biggest fan, and he saw him on a YouTube thing, and he goes, "Chief, you see Joe Biden?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "If they did three or four takes, that's the best take. Did he just have a stroke?" He said to me. And Maddie's his biggest fan. But Wayne was on Week Go Friday. I don't know if you listened, but I mentioned that to him. Wayne, of course, has got the history book in the back of his head somehow. And he goes, it's not the first time that people have selected basically an older, somewhat stable, but pretty much over-the-hill leader in times of crisis. He mentioned Konrad Adenauer.
Now
they brought back, you know, Charles de Gaulle after he was, he's like 80-something. And he goes...
Yeah, Otto von Hindenburg.
Yeah, he goes,
But they
do this... He says, and he goes, Adenauer actually did a... You know, his group did a pretty good job for quite a while. I mean, in de Gaulle's group pretty much stabilized France and did a bunch of things. So it's not like with the right people around him that somebody who's, you know, less capacitated than they used to be can't operate from that spot.
I agree, but that's not what you've got.
No,
and what you've got right now is he was not selected because of his anything that he brought to the table. He was selected because he was not a communist sympathizer, which is what it looked like the Democrats were about. The Democratic primary system was about to produce as a candidate. You know, Bernie Sanders, Biden. Biden did a crappy job in the debates. I thought he looked out of it. I thought he looked simple, and not a strong candidate. But when the Democratic Party was confronted with the prospect of electing a communist or communist sympathizer, somebody that they perceived would be virtually unelectable, and more importantly, I think there's something to this. Not in control of the Obamas, okay? I think that's a big factor. I think you're really seeing the heavy hand of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama and their organization behind what's happening here right now.
That's why Lou, when you
was not in their control.
That's why, and if I was going to change the Constitution, one of the things I would do is you can't be elected president until you're over 60. I don't want. First of all, I don't want to pay somebody for 40 years after they're out of there. I don't want to have Secret Service cars watching their whole family for 40 years. And I don't want them meddling. If they're 80 years old and they're a smart old guy or lady and they want to make a few statements, that's fine. But, I mean, do you think Valerie Jarrett has stood down since she's out?
No. No. I mean, this is why Susan Rice is a nightmare lightning rod. But she's an Obama nightmare lightning rod, and that's why she's in the mix for vice president. Yeah. I think there was a pretty good article, I think it's in the New York Post today, that talks about the fact that Biden is basically a stalking horse for Michelle Obama's run in 2024. And, you know, I mean, that certainly sounds plausible to me, but we got here because of the fact that Biden was the least objectionable guy who I think was in control of the Obamas. The Democratic National Committee pushed him forward. And yet, at the same time, everybody was saying, this guy's out of it. You talk about Trump being intemperate. You talk about Trump in an interview situation saying just crazy stuff. This guy, you know, Trump's stuff, at least it's inarticulate. But at least it's within context.
But if you were comparing the two of them to run your country club, this would be a worthwhile debate. But comparing the two of them to be president of damn near the world, this is insane.
Well, like I said, I'm I'm much more concerned about what Joe Biden is going to enable than I am Joe Biden. And I mean, Scott Adams, who you know, I listen to pretty regularly on his podcast, made what I thought was an interesting point. He said, do you think if you were an open Trump supporter in the during the election in the fall of 2020, you know, you had a Trump sign out on your yard, or you wore a Trump hat or a Trump sticker on your car, do you think, A, you would not be physically, run the risk of being physically assaulted for that? And B, after the election, if Biden wins, do you think you're going to be safe? And I thought about that, and I thought, you know, I'm not sure you can make that. I'm not sure you can make that claim.
Lou, both sides are getting incredibly...
You know, I haven't seen a single report of a Biden supporter being assaulted. Have you?
I don't know. I don't live in North Dakota.
Well, I mean, I'm... There are lots of... You can find... You don't even have to look very far to find reports of assaults on guys wearing MAGA hats or Trump hats or whatever. I have not seen a single one, a single report on a Biden supporter being assaulted.
But right now, the people who will do that, how can I put it this way? I was never a guy, Lou. I never wanted to cause any kind of trouble anywhere. And whenever I went to, if I haven't gone there, but if I went to a game in Alabama, the last thing I would do is wear, you know, Notre Dame or Georgia Tech colors and sit there and be a loud, boisterous guy. Because, you know, there's a chance your day's not going to end well. I mean, I think some of the people who wear the MAGA hats and so forth are dying to get in a spot where somebody comes after them.
That may be the case, but you don't have to look very far to find people just dining in restaurants with those hats being.
But the hat doesn't just say a lot of what's happening, Lou. And I've said a bunch of times here, and I've said to you before, I'm appalled by what's going on with the left. But in my own world, and you have this cerebral world of law and history and so forth, in my own world of money, I can see it as clearly as my hand in front of my face as to why it's happening. If you want to have an amazing debate with people, because I always like to take the other side a little bit just to make people see if people really are thinking or whether they're just spouting. You, of course, are always thinking, so it's always fun. I learn from you. But if you sit there with a group of, I'll say right-wingers, wherever you want to put them, people on the right, businessmen, they can't stand this socialist lean. They can't stand this communist lean, they'll call it, which I don't think any of these people are communists. They're not looking for a dictatorship, I hope.
No, I would call them, some of them definitely are Marxists.
Okay, but Lou, not personally, the universal you need to understand that economically, these people are not you. We're seeing, this is 1929, where 1% of the people have 90% of the money.
I think that's definitely part of it, and I think that's a huge part of it. I think the lockdown has exacerbated that, and trust me, it's going to get worse.
Well, Lou, I mean, if you were to say, even my buddies from Notre Dame, once in a while we have our little thing, he goes back and forth, and one thing I want, and most of them are from the right, some are very successful, and they're always against these people. And they, how can these people be socialists? How can they be capital? You know, how can they be communists? We're a capitalist society. And once in a while, if I really want to cause trouble, I say, you define for me what system, what economic system we have right now. And they look at you, especially if you're dinner having a couple of cocktails. They look at you like a foreheads. What do you mean? We're capitalist? No, we're not. Define this system. Define me what industries you can break in. Define me which industries are more than one or two or three big firms with their nose right up the ass of government that nobody can break in. You're competitive. You're a barber or a beautician, maybe a bar owner. And now those three people are out of business with this pandemic. Gee, go figure. How did that happen, Lou? And if you happen to have a store that sells clothes, you had to close down and go out of business so Target could sell clothes. You think for a second that these people look at this economy? There used to be people on the trading floor. There's nobody there anymore. I mean, there used to be ways for people to competitively get in business and do something. Now, yeah, I mean, David's going to say you can get on Etsy and sell crap from your garage, or not just crap from your garage. You could actually be an artist and sell stuff and make a. Yes, I get all that. That there's always going to be avenues to do things. But basically, out of 100 industries that we need in this country, 95 are closed off to you. And we think this is competitive society. And people look at this and go, I got no friggin' chance. This is wrong. Why?
Well, I think a huge part of it. Let's break this down a little bit. You and I have had this discussion before. I think, and again, I don't want to lose track of this Biden discussion, but you and I have had this discussion before. As an employment lawyer, we've talked about this, and I've talked about the trends that I saw and that I still see. And one of them is the fact that the growing educational disparity between, you know, the haves and the have-nots, and I think it's mostly class. I don't think race is as big a factor anymore as class is. The haves and the have-nots, the educational haves and the educational have-nots, this economy is driving rapidly toward a place where if you're smart and you can get to, on a relatively solid educational track, if you're ahead of the game, you're going to get rewarded. If you're not, if you can't do both of those things, if you're not bright and you're not on an educational system that is going to give you the tools to move forward, you are going to fall behind in this economy.
But the tools, Lou,
fall behind in a hurry.
The tools, Lou, are to be an employee. They're not to be an entrepreneur. There's no entrepreneurs.
Well, there are a few.
Okay, but I'm saying, yeah, there's never going to be none. This is America. But I mean, the education is go to the University of Michigan, get your degree in computer engineering, and go to work for Google. It's not to create a competitor for Google.
Well, agreed, and I'm again. My point is, you're not in terms of success, and in terms of being able to talk about Joe Biden the way we're talking about him and what he's going to enable. We're talking about people who are not on that track. We're talking about people whose education system has failed them. And I mean, there's a growing, for example, you're starting to see it, at least in the literature, a growing pushback against teacher unions. Because I think finally the country is coming around to the idea that the huge monopoly that the National Education Association has enabled here is not helping the country. We're not getting people who understand history. We're not getting people who understand anything other than the rote, America bad, our history's terrible, we've been a terrible place. And this stokes a lot of what you see in the streets. It's stoking a lot, certainly a lot of what you're seeing in academia.
It's stoking
the stupidity that is the 1619 Project at the New York Times and its acceptance. And this is what I'm afraid Joe Biden is going to enable.
Well, look at, we'll do each of us a favor. I'll try and look more toward the stuff you see, and you try and look more toward the numbers. Because I'm telling you, it's right in the... I have never seen, I'm surprised you haven't mentioned it, I have never seen in this country, except maybe... Well, actually not, because there was a draft, a lot of kids from richer families went to Vietnam and didn't come back. Obviously, there's always a little bit more toward the lower end, but I've never seen a class division in my lifetime like this pandemic.
Yeah.
You talk to people,
that was my earlier point. You're right.
This is, I look out the window, I go to the store, there's stuff all over the shelves. I don't do it Amazon, but if I call Amazon, they deliver some crap to me. And by the way, there's gas at the gas station, there's a lady working in there all the time, maybe a guy, but usually a lady. There's somebody's making the coffee, somebody's working at the 7-Eleven. I mean, an incredible amount of the population is working. And they're like servants to the people who aren't working. And I am stunned. I mean, as much as Trump, some of his instincts are pretty darn good, if I'm in the Oval Office there, the thought of the Federal Reserve not coming to work when every other bank has to be there. You know what, Lou? It's unconscionable to me how the Department of as Frank wrote in. I'm sure he's right. How the Department of Health Education in Washington is working from home, working my ass. At the same time, Trump tries to get people to go back to school. You got to set an example, Lou. You can't. I mean, you think the people from the alderman's office working home are doing crap? They think they are, but they're not.
I'm not going to disagree with you. And I think that is as I said. I said this is you're seeing this on a breakdown by class, and the failure to recognize that, by the way, and to focus on the Black Lives Matter or as a organization. And as a rallying point is, I think, one of the great failures of the Democratic Party right now. And not understanding that, hey, look, we're not just talking about African Americans here, but we are talking about a class of people. Honestly, Chief, what the Democratic Party used to represent, right?
Yeah.
The working class, the laboring class, the folks that were trying to work their way out of, you know, an economic situation that was not as good as they could have, looking ahead to the future for their kids, you know, hitting the streets every day, hitting the shop floor every day. That's what the Democrats used to be, and they're not anymore.
No,
and I think their leadership has just absolutely failed to recognize that.
Why can't we? We only got 30 seconds, little boy. Why hasn't a third party emerged?
Well, there are all kinds of things that stop a third party from emerging. By the way, I think I said this in 2016 after he was nominated. I looked at Donald Trump as a third party candidate.
Sure, yeah, he should have.
He hijacked the process, but he wasn't a Republican.
Right.
He was a third party guy.
S&P futures only down 5.25 now. Nasdaq futures down 11.25. I'm Tom Holly's Lou Michaels. She's AV on the board. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering 3 of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. He's Mr. Lou Michael Shee. Is AV on the board. SP Futures only down 475 now. We're coming back. NASDAQ Futures down 10 and a quarter. We can't be down. Come on, we can't do that. Dow Futures down 57. We just have to put more money in the place. Over in Asia, you have the Nikkei down 96.4%. Shanghai up 9.2%. Hang Seng down 171.7. So kind of a mixed bag over there. Europe, everybody's down across the board here. DAX down 86, that's 0.7%, but this is a good one. Good one if you're short. FTSE down 113, that's 1.9%, so that's a big move over there. CAC round down 1%, 50.9. The European Bank of England held their rate steady. I don't know what people expected to see, but a little bit of a disappointment there. We have bonds, 0.52, they still keep leaking down. I mean, if you're a, let's say, more of a classical economist and you look at the bond market, it tells you there's no demand for money, and it tells you that the economy's in bad shape, and it's not turning around. One minus 0.54, Japan plus 0.01, hanging in there to the upside. Oil down 33 cents, 41.86. Brent down 8 cents, 45.09. Natural gas, another 4 cents up, 223. Lou, I hope you bought a whole bunch of natural gas futures, because you got the cash. They're like $1.48, and have ridden those suckers like 75 cents. That's as big a move as I've seen in the non- You know, below zero winner ever. RBOB gas, 122. Gold, up another $15, 2,064. Silver, up $1.21 in silver, 28.10. That is unbelievable. Copper, I can say that every day, but I can't believe it. Lou, I must have had 15 spreads in the last 5 years, wanting this thing to go through 18. Every time it got there, it was like whack-a-mole, a commercial. And now it's $28 in like 2 weeks. It's astounding to me. Anyway, AV, what do you guys for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Can't wait to hear your sports report now that sports is back in.
I know. Sports is
I want to hear the sports report, too, because I'm a huge fan of AV's accent, and I want to hear the sports report this morning.
Wait for it. It's almost there. So I'm glad to be back. It feels like it's been a while. Hope you guys hanging in there. We have 66 degrees out in Chicago. Nice weather continues today and Friday with increased humidity by Saturday and Sunday with some storm chances that may develop by Monday. The day remained partially cloudy with the highest 76 and the lowest 63. It's sunny in Phoenix as usual with coming excessive heat warning by the weekend. The highest of the day should be 110 and 84 by night. Good news, no accidents, no delays at this moment, but if you're heading east or if your commute is through Lakeshore Drive, prepare to enjoy a very colorful, beautiful view. Hope you still can catch it up, right, Tom?
Yeah, she was giving me the whole story on the view. I said, do you mind if I drive, you know?
Yeah, it was really colorful and pinkish. Nice. Going. I feel like it's like the last days of this kind of morning.
Lou, you're a, you know the biblical story of Sodom and Gomorrah, right?
Yes.
Well, I think the big guy upstairs has got something planned for Chicago. I think another 10 feet, there won't be a Chicago. The lake is just keeps
getting. Yeah, it's so high.
You know in Lincoln Park where the jogging path is by the, what used to be the rowing thing there?
Yes.
The rowing thing is almost, it's over the banks. It's almost to the path.
Wow.
Yeah, and if you go like by the shore, because I went there a couple of days ago, it's all like in the sand, like some part between North and Fullerton.
Evidently, there was a wave 2 days ago.
What's happening to the Chicago River front that was put in a couple of years ago? Is the water level up high there?
No, it's behind the lock. But it's okay. The lake has gotten so high when it rains and the city can't run the stuff into the deep tunnel. They open up the locks, which they're never supposed to have to do. The water won't even run out. It's only like a foot difference.
Holy cow.
All right, guys. We're off the topic.
Yeah. Now you got to talk about our sports.
Are you ready?
She stayed up to 1 to watch the Hawks last night just so she can get
the
sports.
I'm just sorry that the Bulls aren't playing right now.
Okay. Cubs won Royals 6-1. Yay. And White Sox lost 0-1 to Bruce.
And the Hawks?
Hawks.
She's not much of a hacker fan.
I couldn't find Hawks.
The Hawks actually won up at the bubble. Although I was listening to him on the radio coming home late. I was out with your friend Greg. We went out to Burr Ridge dinner with a client. And
it's my old stomping ground.
Yeah, well, we went to the Capri. Well, that's a nice place.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you should see the size of the tent they have in the parking lot. The difference in business between the Lori Lightfoot group and the Pritzker group and these suburban mayors, Rodriguez or the people in Burr Ridge, they're like, take the parking lot, put up the biggest tent you can find, do whatever you have to do, get open.
Yes. Oh, yeah. This is why the president's pushing for reopening the way he is.
And then, well, this morning,
so did the Blackhawks win?
Yeah, they won. They won. Edmonton was supposed to sweep. The Hawks are now leading 2-1. But I was listening on the radio, and all they were talking about was that they're in the bubble up in Edmonton, right? There's one bubble in Edmonton and one in Montreal, depending what division. So, Lori Lightfoot actually put Chicago bid in for that. Does she have any idea how this city is being viewed by other places? What a laughable thing that people would bring 15 hockey teams in Chicago?
No, she's totally tone deaf. It's like Richard Daley with the Olympics back in, what was it, 2008?
Anyway, all he did was talk about that evidently they were having like 5 games a day in the same place. And by the game last night, they said the ice was so horrible that the people are passing from guy to guy, the pucks hopping up in the air and hopping over the stick. And then they'd clean it up, between periods. It'd be good for like 5 minutes and it was lousy and they were going to work on it all night or something. I didn't realize that if they played a certain amount of games on ice, the ice started to get bad, but never played
hockey. You've got to have a real cold temperature to put that water down. Otherwise it won't freeze. Even going into the cracks, it doesn't set up and freeze properly.
Okay, so how does having more games in a row, just like a football field, eventually you chop it up?
Yeah, I mean they can put, they could put new water down through the Zambonis. They could run the Zamboni over there and re-coat the ice. But that water will not, unless the surface is like super cold, that new ice is not going to set up with the same density and adhesiveness that the regular ice did. The crystalline structure doesn't have a chance to integrate. And so you skate across that frozen, that newly frozen stuff, it'll tear up.
All right, let's get back to
let's get back to Mr. Biden.
Yeah.
So what, irrespective of whatever we think he's going to enable and what's rolling out, you've nominated a guy who, because you didn't want a communist, who is visibly failing. I took the position 4 months ago, along with a guy named Tucker Carlson, that Joe Biden was not going to be the nominee. That the Democrats were, even if he was the winner of the primary process, the Democrats were going to have to figure out a way to get him out.
I offered some guys the other night 100-1, Lou, and neither one of them run.
Well, I don't know about the Donald, but I still don't think that Biden's going to be the nominee.
All right, well,
so what are the Democrats' options?
Maybe walk us through the process. Say I'm right. The Donald flares out, and the people in the cabinet go. Or he fires 10 more people. And he's alone in the White House. And the cabinet finally goes, you know what? This guy's he's flamed out. I hope it doesn't happen. I mean, I really don't. But I mean, it's the same on either side. What now is the procedure for picking? What if somebody they put Joe Biden up and he starts wandering off talking about?
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, I think. I think that Donald is going to run this through to the bitter end.
I think Biden wants to.
The fact that he's not going to attend the convention. Well, guess what? You know why that is. They don't want people seeing him up close and personal. They don't want him interacting with people. And so I think the Democrats are really faced with a problem, and the idea that it's not a problem is belied by the fact that you're now seeing the editorials coming out of the New York Times saying there's been three of them in the last month saying, you know, these debates really aren't a very good idea because they're terrified of what the debate might reveal in terms of his facilities and faculties. And so if I'm the Democrats, it's apparent they are not going to derail the gravy train, because I think the Obamas are behind this. But they're not going to derail the Biden gravy train before the convention.
I don't think he dies. After watching Blair Hull, who I knew from the trading floor, make a run at governor, he got all the money, said all the right things, went to the right coffee clatches, or how they serve there, and he got all his dough. He had so much more money ahead of him. Was it Blagojevich he ran against? I don't know. Anyway, or was it somebody was running? Or was it Senator? I'm not sure what he was doing, but he was. And he walked out of the restaurant, and I said to my buddy Dr. J, the guy is going to be a loser. What do you mean? I said, Jan, this is a restaurant where all his pals are, and he doesn't wave anybody in the way out. Nobody knows who the guy is. You can't save somebody from themselves. There's no way on earth, even if it's 3 or 4 weeks, if Biden's incapable, you can't hide him to the election. It's not like you could pull that off with Roosevelt in the middle of a war in his fourth term when everybody knew he was incapacitated. But
why
you're not going to do this here.
If the press is on your side and is not going to challenge you, if they're going to be complicit in hiding you, and the press is right now, why couldn't you pull it off?
I'm not saying you couldn't. In my opinion, you will not be able to. I'm going to say, even this current press, plus there's podcasts, there's people like us. We have people listen. We have a lot of people listen. And we're not the only ones, Lou. There's people going to say, wait a minute, when's the last time you had a guy ran for president and you never saw him until the inauguration day? I mean, somewhere, someplace, you've got to get out there and do something.
I think the strategy right now is to keep him out of the public eye.
No doubt.
So let's ask, if he doesn't debate, if he refuses to debate, and I'll be as blunt as I can, the choice the Democratic Party is trying to give the voters is between Donald Trump and not Donald Trump. And that's as long as Joe Biden is not Donald Trump, and he's not Joe Biden, he's not Donald Trump, he's this ephemeral somebody who is out there, anybody but Donald Trump. He's this ephemeral somebody out there who doesn't have anything concrete attached to him. They think they can win. If they have to put him into a place where you people can look at him and say, oh, that's the guy I'm voting for, I think he loses.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I think that's what the Democrats are desperately trying to avoid.
But look,
let me ask
what,
your opinion. If he doesn't debate, do you think he can win?
I just said, if he shows himself to be incompetent, the answer is no.
No, no, no. If he doesn't debate, if the Biden campaign suddenly says, we're refusing to debate.
If he doesn't debate, it's just, It's part of a plan to hide him from the population.
Do you think he can win?
I think the plan.
If he doesn't debate.
No.
Okay. I'm not so sure.
Well, here's my read of how the population has changed. I mean, in my day, not that I still don't have a day, I think I do. In my day, it was an easy thing. You know, Tricky Dick Nixon, who actually I read recently, was actually very good friends with John Kennedy. It was interesting.
Mm.
That their first, you know when their first debate was, Lou?
I can't remember when the first one was, but it was late.
No, it was 1947. They were both rookie congressmen, and there was something going on in Wilkes-Barre or someplace in Pennsylvania. It was a union versus right to work or something debate, and the state asked for each party to send a member to debate in front of the town, and the Democrats chose John Kennedy, and the Republicans chose Tricky Dick. And they got there together and debated. They actually shared the same sleeper car on the way back to Washington because they didn't want to pay for two of them. They had a bunch of cocktails and evidently were friends the whole way. And Kennedy even said in 1960, if I wasn't running, I would vote for Dick Nixon. They were not personal adversaries at all. But what I'm saying is that the Biden situation, well, I'm saying in those days, if you're running from the right and I'm running from the left, we both go and take our bad clothes and we get money from the creatures way over on the side, seem to have the money, and we come back into the middle, and the object was which one of us could pick up the 50% or 60% or 70% in the middle. That was the game, right? And Clinton was probably the best at it, getting money, and the guy had the morals of a snake. You could give him a check saying, I want to do this, he'd walk away and forget even what the check was for, except it was for him. Right, I mean, he was spectacular at that, if that's such a word. So, but now Trump is convinced he's got 30 to 32%, 35% of the population that doesn't matter. They're for Trump. They hate the Democrats. They hate black. I mean, I'm not saying all this, but I'm saying there's people that are just they don't like where this other side's going. They're Trump guys. The more he insults people, the more they like him, and the more he gets insulted, the more they hate people. And so he's got that group. Okay, then there's the 30%. That are going to vote, they'd vote for, you know, Attila the Hun versus Trump. They're haters. But now there's this group in the middle. Now they're just saying, we'll take our chances. And I think if Biden looks like he can't put two words together, I think the middle says, well, you know what, at least the one guy can talk. I mean, there's this 25% that is totally up in the air. You know who they are.
I think had the Democrats been able to select a credible candidate that would have appealed to that 30% that you're talking about, they would have done it. They thought they had something in Joe Biden that could do it, but the trouble is that none of the people that were running in that primary, or virtually none of them, had sufficient name recognition and sufficient strength to say, you know what, the Marxists and the pseudo-Marxists that we've got in our organization, you know, I'm not going to talk to those people. I'm not going to represent those people. I'm not going to take on those views. They're antithetical to America and to Americanism. Nobody on the left, in the Democratic willing to say that.
The first things I said in the show was he can't discipline the party.
That's right, exactly. And none of the people that were running could. So
well,
now
I mean,
you end up
this
all
is
those
no
people
different.
Fall by the wayside. You end up in a campaign with a communist sympathizer, if not an actual communist, who looks like he has momentum sufficient to carry him to the nomination because of how far left the Democratic primary process has gone. And the party leadership panicked. He was not in control of the Obamas, Sanders, and so they moved to Biden, notwithstanding the fact that everybody could see that Biden was failing. So we are back in the John Stroger situation.
Well, Lou, it's not much different.
Functionally almost incapacitated.
It's not much different than if Reagan would have run a year later for his second term.
I think there's something to that. Yeah. And I know you hate Ronald Reagan.
No, I don't.
I think there's something to
that. No, I don't. Matter of fact, everybody that I have... hate is a strong word, Lou. What I hate is he reminds me of Jimmy Stewart and Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. You know, he didn't shoot Liberty Valance. Take Ronald Reagan for what he was. And Ronald Reagan was a very, I think, honest man. You could make a deal with him. He had a pretty good feel of the economy and for people. And
he was a fantastic orator.
And he had the ability to have smart people around him and not feel jealous.
Yeah.
He had tremendous capabilities.
I think there's something to what you just said with respect to, had he been a year older, we might be looking at this. The scary thing right now is that at least for a second term, Biden has not been elected. The mental decline, I think, is apparent.
Sure it is.
And so the Democrats are faced. I think the people around him are going to try to push him across the finish line. And from their perspective, I think their view is all we have to do is get past the election. If we can get him past the election, even if he passes away before inauguration, we'll have a vice presidential candidate that we can prop up who will continue to function. I think that's honestly, Chief, I think that's one of the reasons why this vice presidential thing is taking so long.
They are looking
for somebody that I think the Obama's hand is in this. That the Obamas, you know, is not going to damage the Obama legacy, and that they will be able to control after Biden leaves. And I think it's not going to be a matter of a year in office before Biden leaves under the 25th Amendment or something like that.
Lou, in the book Freedom from Fear, and I'm sure it's other places. I forget who the guy's name was. It was Roosevelt's vice president his first three terms. And Roosevelt ran the fourth time, and they booted the guy. Because and Harry Truman went and talked to, he hadn't seen Roosevelt in, you know, months. And he goes and he sits down, and I think he was in the Oval Office with a few guys, and they're essentially interviewing him for vice president. And he took one look at Roosevelt, and he said, "They're not interviewing me for vice president, they're interviewing me for president. Because this man's not going to last." And Harry Truman was smart enough to realize the difference. And that's exactly what you're talking about now. But the point coming, Lou, is what is the plan? And I actually believe that Bernie, in a lot of ways, had some very seriously good ideas. And I don't know what the problem is with these people. Him, Trump, they put them all in the same thing. Why do they come up with this pretty good idea about stuff? Now, there's no doubt. Student loans are at 6.5% or wherever the hell they are, blended rate, and Amazon can go out and borrow at 2.5% or 1.5%. It's unconscionable to me, Lou. It's absolutely unconscionable to me.
But that's not a presidential election issue, Chief.
Sure it is. Look at the amount of people that are stuck with there's a trillion and a half dollars.
That's the kind of in the weeds detail. That is not going to swing a large number of people to vote for
him. But he understands that for a big swath of America, these student loans are a huge problem. Okay, I would say that would be a campaign issue for me if I was running. But I don't think I would like to have somebody like me to run through there and say I'm going to pay for it by putting a half a penny on every double counting of stock because of payment for order flow or something. Okay, first of all, I hate payment for order flow, and Bernie doesn't probably even know what that is. But the idea, I'm in the stock business. Do I think that PTI and firms like this, well, Merrill Lynch maybe could, that all of a sudden there's enough money in this industry to repay all student loan debts?
That was Bernie's platform.
But the numbers don't add up.
It's an interesting Marxist ideas. But no money to pay for it.
Right.
And no way to pay for it.
But now we're into this point where, okay, we're looking at the personalities. But look at the numbers right now, Lou. And I cannot begin. I mean, I'll try. I don't think, since I'll tell you what, this is my life, I don't understand what these numbers mean. I can't imagine. They came out 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, the GDP number down 32.9%. Everybody's all happy because it wasn't 36. And you've got five younger than me, not kids, but younger than me, I'll say economic buffoons that immediately start talking about, we've seen this before, we can work our way through this, this isn't a problem, blah, blah, blah. I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, where have you idiots seen this before? The only one close was the second quarter of 1921, and it was 20%, not 33%. And I don't think things didn't work out so good in the 20s, did they?
Let me put it this way. As demonstrated by his interview with Shaw on Sunday, and as demonstrated in repeated discussions with other reporters, neither one of these candidates is going to talk about or is able to talk about that level of detail. Like I said, this is in the weeds stuff, at least right now. It may not be later on. I want to go back to what the Democrats do. You're saying if Biden doesn't debate, you think he's going to lose?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not so sure. I'm going to say,
let me reload
here on the witness stand. I'm going to say if the policy is to not even show yourself to the election, he's going to be just like Michael Bloomberg. You can't just buy it. You got to be a person.
Oh, he'll show himself.
Jeez. Where?
He'll show himself. He'll show himself to friendly MSNBC and New York Times and WashPo reporters.
I don't think he can pull that off.
They'll talk to him. They're not going to ask him the hard questions.
You know what?
And they'll restrict the video. They'll keep it low key. They will. You know, again, the goal is to not have Joe Biden stand for.
Well, we got to dash a little bit.
Other than not being Donald Trump,
I'm surprised. We only got a couple. My last statement, then we'll have to push you off till next week. Matty Weber will be our judge. Matty said to me, if they can't do 5 takes on a commercial on YouTube and make him look good, how the hell is he going to talk in public?
I agree with that.
So
they won't let him.
So I'm saying, I don't care if it's an interview with the Holy Ghost. If he's failing, he's failing.
You know, I think again they will work to keep that out. So far they have.
Okay.
I mean, these comments are not getting wide coverage.
It happens in a second in today's world, Lou. You take care of yourself, buddy. SP Futures down 11, NASDAQ Futures down 16. We'll be right back, Mr. Dan Janulis.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamao. She's AV on the board. SP futures up. I'm sorry, down. I'm still saying up. Down 14.25. NASDAQ futures down 26. So we're leaking a little bit. We have Dan?
Yes.
Have Mr. Dan Janias from President and Chief Investment Officer at Kratos Capital and quickly becoming one of the show's favorites and certainly one of my favorites because he deals in a part of our industry that I just never got into, and every week I'm like a sponge learning from the man, and I hope everybody else is too. So, Dan, you just real quick, I hope your ears were burning because yesterday one of the ladies was in it to help. Well, I do some my Protecting Ice program. I do a subcontract for the Nigerian family office for that, right? So the people who want to be protected, they come in, and one of the ladies runs the dividend stuff. And I said, well, gee, I got this guy that comes on Thursday. He's terrific. We'll have to talk about, you know, doing something with him or whatever. But I said, you know, how many stocks you got left in your dividend stuff? And she's like, only a few. The rest of them, I just got to the point where I thought there was too much risk in the stock for the, you know, the piddly dividends they were paying. And I said, you know, I wonder, I mean, we touched on it last week. I mean, what would Dan Janitas do if he was in Germany and they're paying, I mean, at what point do you say, the risk isn't there, and oh, by the way, but what we're end up doing is people say, get me out of the dividend program and put me in like some aggressive, you know, QQQ group, and you're sitting there going, oh God, I mean, do you really want to do that? I mean, it's obviously the, you know, client's decision, but I mean, the idea, you can't be in money, you can't be in bonds, you can't be munis, you can't be anywhere. I mean, I think, from what I've gathered from you, for the longest period of time, you've been able to do through a lot of hard work, you've been able to still find, the right clam that still had the pearl left in it, and now that's becoming more difficult. And you're still doing it, but now what? What's the status? I guess my question.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. We are moving. You know, we have as we spoke last week. You know, sort of looking for yield, a quest for yield. And where do you go at this point? In the high yield market, there is still the high yield bond market. There are still some names where you can get a decent yield, but that yield has actually been declining over the last week. So a good solid name, if you want, say, a bond with a 1 year maturity where we were buying them 2 months ago at 8%, 1 month ago at 6%. Now we're talking closer to, say, 4.3%. What we are doing is moving our clients that have been predominantly focused on fixed income into some of the smaller names that we consider less risky because of the level of research we do. So it really depends on how well you know these companies. And we're talking to the senior management of these companies. We're doing extensive research. We're following them very closely. We only start participating once we've had direct contact with senior management, and we keep that research process going throughout the time that we own the bonds. So we have found this gives us that sleep at night, you know, sleep easy at night feeling. We're not really having to take on, say, the volatility. We understand the volatility in the stock price, but we're staying in those industries that are relatively recession resistant, and the names that are kind of boring, so they haven't really necessarily run here with the rest of, they've done extremely well, but they haven't necessarily run with the rest of the market. And when I say the rest of the market, I'm talking about predominantly the large tech names that have really dominated the trading and have dominated the media. So we have some names that are both what I would call good long-term holds that are not necessarily, again, on everybody's radar screen, but we believe they're solid companies. And again, in doing our homework, we've been able to see a lot of price movement, upward price movement in these stocks, and it's, you know, not necessarily on the day when the market's up.
Well, I agree with that. But the bonds that you identified at 8, they're now at 4. I mean, you're a huge winner in those things. That's way better than a sharp stick in the eye. I mean,
absolutely.
We onboarded one of the guys, brought on a couple of big new clients, Dan, and he's got all these bonds, and he goes, "Chief, what do I do with them?" I said, "Well, where are they?" He goes, "Well, they're like 6% bonds, and they're trading like 125." I go, "Sell them, jeez."
Yeah, absolutely. Once you get over 100, once you get over par, you have what's called negative convexity. So it's it's sort of a losing game. You do collect that interest and that coupon, but you give it some of it back with the principal, and you have upside. You have a limit on the upside, even if there's great news on the company and the credit improves. That pull towards maturity as you get into the shorter, you know, as the maturity comes closer and closer, it caps your upside. So there could be another name. So as you know, I think that was great advice to sell at 120. I mean, I would be selling at 105 and then looking for something at 99. Buying at a discount, there's, you know, the history has shown and the studies that we've done all the way back to when I started at 35 years ago at Loomis Sales, and Dan Fuss would always say, you know, buy at a discount. There's no purpose in buying at a premium because you're limiting your upside. So there may be another bond, for example, that if you're selling that bond with the 8% coupon that's trading at 105, you might be another bond you can get that's trading at 7, that's trading at 99, and that would be a better long-term investment.
Dan, out of curiosity, I think you know because I don't. Maybe if you don't, just say so. But when you see the negative rates like in Europe, what are the coupons on those bonds and where are they trading?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously with negative rates, you're paying the bank to keep your money there. And in Germany, for example, I mean, if you're talking about bonds, I would not be participating in that market because it makes absolutely no sense for investors to have negative yield, anything that yields, you know, that has a negative yield. If you were buying a corporate bond that was issued and trades in local currency, and there's a lot of euro bonds in the high yield market, and you can still get yield. For example, the same company that may have a U.S. dollar-denominated bond, we could have a euro-denominated bond, could actually be a German-based, German company that tends to have all their business over in Germany, and they've issued some bonds there. So, for example, if they had a 5% coupon and it was a 10-year bond, now when rates are negative, you know, you're starting at, I don't know, say 4.5% for your total potential yield to maturity. I would be looking outside of Germany if I was in that situation. I don't see a whole lot of upside there. There are people who could make money there that really understand the currency. You know, they're able to play the euro, the currency trade. But to me, that's one extra step. We still have plenty of names here in the States where we can make money and we have positive rates. Now, just to explain, when you're looking at a corporate bond, you're always looking at the yield of that bond. Say it's a five-year bond, and you're subtracting the yield of the five-year treasury. And that the difference is called the spread. So if it's a five-year bond trading at 5% and the five-year treasury, well, let's say the 10-year treasury is only trading at 0.5, so you'd take 5 minus 0.5, and that gives you 4.5, then you multiply that by 100. Now you have 450 basis points. So that's the spread between the yield on the corporate bond that you're buying and the yield on the comparable bond of the same maturity, the risk-free bond, the treasury bond. Now let's do that in Germany, and let's say the rate is negative. So you're following the same, you have the same formula, the same calculation, so you're taking that 5% five-year bond, but now you have a negative yield. So rather than having, you know, say we have negative 0.5, so rather than having 450, you actually have 550 basis points of spread. But what I'll say is that does not represent the same value, because that last 50 basis points really is not, it's not going to get you anything. It's, you know, it's the risk-free rate, but when the risk-free rate becomes negative, it really changes the whole picture. It makes the whole spread analysis a lot less accurate. So it is a difficult trade to do when you're looking, say, at buying a corporate bond in a country that has negative interest rates.
Well, it seems to me that, I mean, I'm trying to figure out, and you're helping here, but I'm trying to figure out the difference. I mean, I don't believe that the German government or whoever the hell puts out the 10-year bond, let's say, I can't believe the thing is going out at a negative rate. It must have, say, a 1% rate, and somebody's just buying it up at 110 to where at the market price it's negative. I can't believe the thing is issued at a negative rate, is it?
I don't believe it is. I don't believe on the issue that it's negative, and I think a lot of what's happened is that your legacy bonds, you know, the ones that you tend to say, you know how this works, is so the, you know, we have a 2-year and a 5-year and a 10-year, and those bonds will be around for a certain period of time until the next 2-year is issued. And when the next 2-year is issued, it could theoretically be issued, you know, we could be at a period at some point in the near future where that new 2-year bond is issued at a negative rate. But if you don't have a new, you know, if you're not having new issuance, you could actually have a bond that's a legacy bond that had been a 5-year and now has become a 2-year 3 years later. And whatever the rate on that would be negative, for example, in this environment. So you can either measure a bond based on new bonds that, you know, new bonds or new T-bills or new treasury bonds or new treasury notes that come to market, or you can use a legacy bond that whose maturity has shortened as your point of reference. Those legacy bonds where their point of reference has shortened, you know, their maturity has shortened over time, are the ones that are trading negative.
So if you... Just so we back up, because this is new, even for this show, this is new verbiage, shall we say. When somebody issues a bond, there's a coupon rate. I mean, Dan, kick me if I'm wrong, he knows better than me. Somebody's going to say, I'm XYZ Corp, I'm going to pay 6%. Well, even if we price the bond yesterday, and we issue it today, the market price at the auction, for lack of a better term, is never going to be exactly 100. Well, I won't say never, but rarely. Because the market rate today, even if normal times, might be 6.01 or 5.99 or something. So that bond is always going to, the first day, the company might get 99.99, right, Dan? Or they might get 100 in 2 cents. There's always going to be, so the thing is always priced, there's the market rate and there's the coupon rate. So what we're talking about, is Dan's saying, is the thing is issued maybe at 5%, but now that the risk-free rate goes negative, that particular bond with 2 years left might be 2% or 1.5% when it should be 5%. But I this it confuses me that I whenever the things start to get that kind of premium, it's almost like, you know, the Lone Ranger's coming over the hill. The only people that are buying it are the central bank. If one day they don't show up, you're stuck with something at 110 that's worth one. I mean, right?
You know, exactly. And the thing is, with a lot of the new issuance that we've seen here of these very long-dated bonds, I would say they're not necessarily very, they're not appealing because we're in a very low interest rate environment. And again, overseas, we have negative rates. So you've got to consider where you're going to be. If you're going to buy a 30 or 40 year bond, you've got to consider where we're going to be 5-10 years from now. And there is a cycle to interest rates, and we are going to see rates go higher at some point. We have throughout history. So I would say it's not a good investment, especially where rates are negative, to be buying, say, a corporate bond or a bond that has been issued at, you know, like you're saying, for example, if it's 6%, but it's really 5% in the market, it's not a good time to be buying that bond. It would be a long-term bond. It would be better to wait. Now, if it has a short-term maturity, it could be very attractive. We tend to focus on bonds with shorter maturities. We're not likely to see any increase in rates in the near term. So you'll continue to see that bond track towards its maturity. When it gets closer to its maturity, you'll get your yield. You'll get your full 5%. But you're exactly right. It becomes a much less attractive investment in a negative interest rate environment. It becomes a much less attractive investment in a low interest rate environment, especially when you're looking at buying long-term bonds.
What do you think the chances are? Was it Amazon that just did the, somebody did a 40-year at like 2.5, didn't they?
Yeah, which that's a perfect example. I know that there's a number of organizations. I think Disney had some bonds out there at a very low. I know some of the government agencies have actually issued bonds at ridiculously low rates. There's a demand from, say, a bond fund that has to buy bonds of a certain rating, and they have to stay invested, fully invested. So if that's the only choice they have, that may, you know, they'll have to buy those bonds. There's also insurance companies, for example, that have what they call asset liability management. So they can buy long-term bonds to meet their liabilities, but unless their liabilities are only at, for example, 2.5%, it's unlikely that they're going to be able to do that in this very low interest rate environment. So absolutely agree with you that bonds are not a good investment. Higher quality bonds in particular, because you're getting such little yield, and there's certainly an opportunity cost to being able to invest in, for example, a dividend stock that still has a decent yield. So if you have the option of going into a dividend stock or a higher quality stock, or some of the stocks like that we invest in that are maybe a little less liquid but still have really solid businesses, there'd be a lot more investment. There'd be a lot more upside. There'd be a much better chance. Now, what has benefited our strategy, as it has the entire market, is the liquidity that's been pumped into the system. So the winners are going to be any stocks that have had liquidity issues, you know, whether they're smaller or just less, you know, maybe an international equity that doesn't trade as frequently. Those stocks have benefited from the Fed's support of the system, the pumped in liquidity. Bonds have generally, if you're talking about a bond with a 2.5% coupon for 40 years, that's say $1 billion of issuance, it's going to be liquid in most environments. So you're not benefiting from the additional liquidity that the Fed is pumping in from an investor's point of view.
And why do classy dudes like yourself say things like benefiting by the liquidity and say benefiting by the Fed printing money and throwing it at people?
It's the reality of what's happening right now. I mean, it's
which one?
The Fed buying bonds back, the Fed buying, you know, investment grade bonds, even some high yield bonds, provides a market, a two-sided market to some securities that maybe don't trade quite as frequently or maybe are less liquid, and that's a huge benefit to an investor. It gives you a sense of comfort that, hey, if I want, for example, I had a client recently, I mean yesterday, she She owns a restaurant. She has some cash she wants to put aside for a year, and she's asking me where can I put that money. And so we do have some bonds that we know we could invest her for the short term and get her 4.5 to 5%, and have a lot of confidence because the Fed has pump liquidity, because there is a bid for those bonds, that we could sell them. She said, what if I have an emergency and I need them out at a certain time? Well, we could sell them in the near, you know, over the next year, and she could, you know, without a penalty, unlike a CD, and she could make some good, you know, she could make money in that period of time that she's held those bonds. So we talked about the advantage of holding a bond with a 4.5 or 5% yield rather than holding a treasury with a 0.4 or 0.3% yield, or buying a CD that you're locked up with that you don't have the liquidity issue. So yes, the Fed's putting money into the system provides a bid, provides an opportunity if you're invested in a name like a bond and you want to sell it within the next year. So this is a good example of an opportunity that the Fed has provided that we may not have had in a typical downturn in our cycle, in our economic cycle. So that has been a benefit. I also believe that's the primary reason that the stock market has done so well. This additional liquidity that's come into the market has allowed investors to feel a sense of confidence.
Dan, sounds to me like you have a knowledge of economics. When do you go from doing an attaboy, you provided liquidity when it was needed, to all you idiots have done is degraded our currency by a factor of X? What are you doing?
But that's still there in the back of my mind too. So, the currency, that's why we have, we have participated in gold and silver. So from an investor's point of view, we started early. We had gold and silver positions on. We consider gold and silver good long-term diversification plays. So from the point of view, we really aren't the ones making the decision. We're the ones who are looking for opportunities to deal with a situation when the spigot is turned off or is at least, we dial it back a little bit. So there will be other ramifications. There will be issues. The deficit issue will be one of the largest issues I think the new administration, or the next administration, I should say, is going to be dealing with. How that impacts us, though, in terms of how we invest going forward, is just to structure a portfolio that has investments like silver and gold. And as you've noticed, there's been major rallies in those currencies. In those commodities over the last, last 6 months or so, but especially very recently. So other people are doing just what you are suggesting, and okay, how are we going to deal with that environment? And that environment will come.
Dan, one of the most, sorry to interrupt, but you're first of all, those are my biggest holdings, the gold and silver.
You're in the right place.
Well, I've been, the silver has run fine, but we always have puts on stuff, so we're dragging a little bit. But that's fine, because they've had up and down, but the GDX, God, I just got up to, I sold calls against them, and that went all fine for a while, but now I've got the 38s. I had to put another whole position on top. But my question to you is, you mentioned being early. Now, I'm not asking you how early, because I don't think you were as early as me. I was like 2 years ago. I see this money supply marching up, and I'm going, this is inflationary. It might have been 3 years ago, so I had a little bit of my client's money in there, and a little bit more. And plus the rest of the stuff, my guys really don't want to be in, so much the Apples of the world or whatever. But my question to you, and this is my fascination with the business since the day I got here 40-some years ago, when does something all turn? What was so obvious to me, I probably was long silver, the 18 strike, 15 times over the last 2 years. And every time it got there, it was like whack-a-mole. The sellers came out of the woodwork. Same thing with the GDX. It'd get to near 31, 32, and then nothing. All of a sudden, in 3 weeks' time, it's like they're both up like 50%. or 40%. Right. I mean, not the gold itself, but the gold stocks and silver actually is up, you know, pushing 40%, right? It went from like 17 something to 25. And like, what was the trigger? Why on that particular, if I was smarter, I could have been an Apple until 3 weeks ago, and then all of a sudden said, this is the day for gold and silver. What did everybody else see on that particular day that I didn't? Or that I saw before, it's like when I first started the business, interest rates were 12%. And it was obvious to me the market could only go up. Yet I was long for a year and a half through 1981 until August of 82. And all of a sudden, one day, everybody goes, hey, we should be going up. I mean, I've never been able to figure out why that day, not why a week before. I mean, why didn't this gold stuff happen? We're now in August. Why didn't it happen in May? Why did it take till July?
Well, we're in the same, you know, we have the same mindset here because we've been involved for several years. You know, we've had pretty good sized positions on for several years. And the reason for us having those positions on early are the same reasons that you invested early, that but we also realize from having been in this business as long as we have that if you look back to see what happened with silver, I mean, we were buying in at, you know, years ago back in at 14, rallied to 46, and we actually wrote it up, but we cannot predict the actual day. We know it's going to go up. And I'd rather be early than trying to chase it as it goes up. So we're, you know, I'm in the same situation, the same investor, longer term. But we recognize that there will be a point where people are going to shift attention. So without doing a whole lot, here's a really easy investment opportunity is really here you can look at the chart over time and you can see that, yes, it spikes. And then it sort of spikes down as well. So there's not this kind of like we're the reverse of the V-shaped recovery. I mean, it goes up very quickly, and unless you're already in, you could miss this if you take vacation. You know, if you're not paying attention. So I have the same investment philosophy as you do in terms of looking at what's going on economically, looking at where the money's going, looking at where the opportunities are, and then getting in early. In terms of why it hits on a certain day, I think it's the same concept. In this case, it was really going back to your question about what do we do in an environment where, you know, there's this economic uncertainty, there's pressure on the dollar, you know, there's, you know, at some point we'll have inflation. We all know that it's going to come back because it has, and there's that cyclicality. This recovery has been spread out over a period of time. This has been a big bump.
We're running out of time, but we have to do a deep dive in this next week. I can't wait till next week, though, because I mean, yeah, I mean, it's the bane of investors, and you and I are. That's what we do.
Yes,
you're right.
Exactly. It's a long term focus. That's
you'd rather be early than late, but
not trying to trade the markets day to day, but looking out at the long term.
Give us a Dan Janitas. Give us a quick from where? Give us a quick plug.
Kratos Capital. www.kratoscapital.com.
All right, buddy. Talk to you next week. You're on the site, so you can find us here as well. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so.
I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, everybody. This is Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. She's AV on the board. S&P Futures now up. Down 250, NASDAQ is up 450, as the jobless numbers came in way better than we thought. Initial claims 1.19 million versus 1.4. Still over a million, but better than it has been. I can't imagine who's left to be laid off, but I guess there are some people. The Dow's down 81. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 96.4%, Shanghai up 8.2%, Hang Seng down 171. So a little bit of the downside, but not much there. Europe, however, mostly downside. DAX down 95.7% to FTSE, down 104, 1.7, as the Bank of England held rates unchanged, obviously disappointing the FTSE. It's trading 6,001 cents, so it's right on the cusp of 6,000. CAC round down 51, 57, it's 1.2%. U.S. bonds, well, just as a review of yesterday, we had a, Dow was up 373. Disney was a lot of that. S&P was up 21, NASDAQ was up 57, so we're coming off a big day. Bonds 0.52, the Bund minus 0.53, Japan positive 0.016, so they're actually up a little bit. Oil down 32 cents, 41.87, Brent down 8 cents, 45.09, natural gas up 3 cents, 222, and David will be on in a second. He's the one who said there was a buy at 148. I don't know if he bought any. Our Bob is 122, that's unchanged. Gold up another 23.50, 2,072. Silver up $1.42, 28.31. Copper down 2 cents, 289.
AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, and a huge report on the Hawk game.
Good morning, France. It's nice weather continues today and Friday with increased humidity by Saturday and Sunday, with some storms chances that may develop by Monday. Today remains partially cloudy with the highest of 76 and the lowest 63. Sunny in Phoenix with clear skies and some possible excessive heat that come in on the weekend. Thursday, highest temperature will be 110 during the day, and then it will drop till 84. Traffic looks smooth, no major holds up. There might be some insignificant delays on Dan Ryan Expressway heading west due to the road construction, where the right lane is closed before Roosevelt Road. And in sports, we have Cubs that won Royals 6-1. Chicago Blackhawks won Edmonton Oilers 4-3. And White Sox lost 0-1 to Brewers.
See, there you go. So how many pitchers do the White Sox use, you know?
What?
Never mind. Thank you very much. Let's just. So, what kind of sports are the people hang around with in Ukraine?
Soccer.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, not that's it, but like the most popular is soccer.
Did you play soccer?
No, it's.
Girls don't play.
Some of them, but mostly no. I played volleyball a little.
All right. That's. And that softball, not anything like that. Here's the girls are active.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying, you know. But soccer's big, I assume.
Yeah.
But so did you follow soccer or no?
I did follow, like, some soccer plays, games, just, you know, with the company of my friends.
Oh, it was an
but
event.
Not on my own.
If they were buying, you were going, right? One of those kind of things? Anyway.
Something like that, yeah.
David, how are you? Save AV from this grilling I'm giving her.
Well, let's talk about the natural gas trade. No, I don't trade futures, and I seldom trade an ETF based on it. But anyways, under 170 was a buy, or even under 180 was a good buy basis the October future. And 240 was huge resistance. It stopped at 239.5 yesterday. It could fail from there. The oscillators are extended. Relative strength is about 76.5. And the stochastics short and long are, you know, in the low to mid 80s. So it's getting extended upside, believe it or not. If it gets over 240, I'd say maybe close to 260. Up there, you got to sell it.
Wasn't the low like 148?
That was a different month.
Okay.
This one, the low was right under 170.
Okay. So market keeps pushing. I thought it was a blip. David, we're in August. I think these guys are going to have a 35 to 40% increase in the money supply in 1 year. That's like
I wouldn't doubt it. They're on pace for that, I think,
yeah.
Aren't they?
Yeah. I don't even know how you... How do you? I mean, you better hope if there's money coming your way, you grab it. I don't care if it's dropped out of a helicopter, knock the guy down next to you and grab it, or something. But you can't be living with your old nest egg. Even if it's $1 million, it's going to be worth what $600,000 a year from now, right?
I'll tell you. You know, we've talked for well before the pandemic and well before this kind of money supply increases and whatever about. You know, inflation, real inflation, what's really in the basket compared to 5 years ago. You know, and we've talked about it for 4 years, but I'll tell you this. You know, we pick up like tacos or whatever, you know, on special either Tuesday or Wednesday night, once a week or whatever. And you know, and a curbside maybe one other time a week. Every single dish is up a buck at these fast food places. And the portions are down 25%.
Yeah.
You know, I get a spinach pie. The thing was a whole meal. Now it's barely three quarters of the container and it's up a buck. And so, you know, I asked the guy and he says, nah, you're right. Our costs have gone up. Supply chain stuff, you know, it is what it is. So even if, you know, the actual price of a dish or a commodity or something in the grocery store isn't posted higher, the quantity's lower. There's absolute inflation way, 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 way above what they're telling us.
Well, and it comes down to I mean, how far can you push? I mean, people like to go out to dinner, and a lot of people, you know, a lot of people have money, and people, a lot of people who are at home have more money than they've had in a while because they're making more. At least they weren't two weeks ago. So there's money around. I mean, you see retail sales and everything up. The question is, how artificial are they? I don't know. Carl sent us a thing the other day. Carl Denninger will be on tomorrow. That he, I don't know where the hell he found this. David, there's statistics all over the place. 7.1% of the national income right now is being sent to people from the federal government.
Is what is sent by the federal government?
Yeah, it's like the checks you get, the 12, well, in the last.
Yeah, I heard that on CNBC. They had that.
Yeah, and you know what the previous record was in like 1975? In the midst of that, you know, the inflation problem we had back there and everything?
I don't know.
1.5. And we're at levels here that we haven't even. these it's like the GDP drop, 33% versus 20% in 1 month in 1922 or 21 or something. We're not even on the planet of normal here. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you what this even means, David. I mean, I think that if you're getting the largesse, if you're the one getting the big loans that you don't have to pay back, and those kinds of things, if you look at the PPP money, and we had all kinds of letters came in because Maddie tweeted out, one of the listeners sent me, and we still have it here somewhere, I think I have it in my favorites pile, although it's not my favorite. Dan, I'll ask you, how many businesses in Illinois, or not all businesses, some of them are like churches and stuff, which is even more bizarre, how many businesses in Illinois got a PPP loan over 150 grand? What would your guess be?
I would have no idea.
And we'll just lob one out there at me. Take a swing.
245.
27,000.
Holy cow.
And the average was 155. So I'm going to say there's another 30, 40,000 below 150, but I don't really know, you know, because they only list the places that are over.
That's what's lifting asset prices. You know,
well, yeah.
Individuals I was talking about, you know, PE expansion, you know, whatever. One I've been following is Wayfair. I mean, symbol W. And with all disclosure, I have one, you know, put spread on, long put spread. So, you know, I'm negative. Stock hit $21.70. March 19th, 4 days before the market low. $300 on the board today.
Yeah.
No earnings.
This has nothing earnings to do. This is 2000 all over. I think it's even worse. But speaking of which.
Earnings per share minus 698. Price to book 24 times.
Whatever happened to the issue they had with the child slavery on there? Remember that story?
It's unbelievable.
Do you remember that story?
Yeah.
Did that just die?
Hello?
Yeah, did that just die, that story?
I don't know. I don't know what happened to it. There was all kinds of accounting fraud, you know, things, class action as well. I mean, it doesn't matter. It just,
well, I was
momentum
looking
goes through. And the black boxes or the dark holes, you know, join in and it just pushes. And I guess they got enough shorts that it just doesn't matter what reality is.
Well, as you know, I go through the dividend plays every day, and if any stocks have a dividend, so it forces me every quarter to, like, basically look at every stock, well, every stock that has decent dividends. And, David, these are stocks I remember trading 20, 30 bucks. They're all 150, 200. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, you look at the ones in the Dow, or you see there's a lot of oil companies, a lot of communicate. I mean, you still see telephone trade, you know, 29, or you'll see Slumber J, but everything else, anything that's in any of this stuff that people are doing online or buying stuff, I mean, it's like eBay, only there was like 50 of them back when eBay was high. They're not making any money. I mean, it's, how many places, how many times are we going to have massive, premiums on stuff that people, shop for crap online? They're just another retailer, Dave. I'm not saying selling.
No, and I know. And how many people? And it's not like it's, you know, reflect stuff that's coming, you know, from somebody's basement. They have brands. I don't know, maybe some is pre-owned, maybe some aren't. I've maybe been on the website twice, but they have brands, and yet they don't make any money. Somehow they, I don't know if it's build out, I don't know if it's Facebook advertising, I don't know if it's reinvestment in the company, but whatever it is, to go from $20 to $300, losing share, and if you break up the company, it's worth, you know, a 24th of what the price is. I don't get it, especially time period. Okay, so you grow into your multiple, you start producing earnings like Amazon or whatever. Do you think with, you know, even 1.2, you know, million unemployment, 16, you know, million continuing claims, you know, that everyone's sitting at home buying furniture?
I don't think so. Plus, I don't.
The market does.
But I get a couple of them, David. You know, these are ones you get in your promotional column on your Google, and these are guys that it's. And there's somebody's deals and this deals and that deal, and you go to them. They'll say, okay, you can get, you know, Ray-Ban sunglasses are, you know, whatever, $85 today with our discount, and you click through and you actually go sometimes to the Ray-Ban site with some promo now. Are these guys just getting, you know, $5 a throw from Ray-Ban by placing the ad up there and sending me the email?
Oh, sure. And Google gets, you know, I don't know how many, I can't tell you it's 1 cent or 30 cents, but every time you click, Google gets paid.
I think these other guys only get paid if there's a sale, I think, because they're,
yeah.
But I'm saying,
Google gets paid on,
but how much,
although it's become competitive and their click cost has gone down.
But how much, you know, how much money's in that, David? I mean, how much, it's, I don't know, I guess they're fighting for the thing that, you know, because there's no Macy's to go buy this stuff anymore. Well, I guess there is in some places, but, I mean, they're fighting over, but I think the margins are low. I don't see how all these stocks can be worth this much. I mean,
No, I get it.
Anyhow, so with the Fed doing what they're doing, how do you, I mean, these earnings companies, if they beat on earnings, stocks are up 15-20%. It's almost like, well, I think it is like the dollar's worth 40% less than it was a year ago. And it's starting to be reflected daily. I mean, it's not like you guys did this for a month or two, but right now it's percolating through the system, and there's a delay in monetary policy. I mean, sometimes as much as 6 months, but I think it's more towards 3 to 5 now. But I mean, there's a delay in this. But I don't see how you fight it, David. I mean, you can't fight the silver and gold. I mean, I had to go get long again yesterday because my calls, I thought, so I started selling the calls when the GDX was 20, and I made it all the way to 38 before I got caught, which is pretty darn good. But now I had to put a whole new position on them in the low 40s.
Right.
Because, yeah, I mean, these 38s are never going anywhere. I mean, where's this thing going to go? 60 now? I mean, I can't imagine that because it took me so long to get it out of the 20s, and now it's 45, and everybody wants it. I had this stuff when nobody wanted it.
You know what? When something does it like that, you know, and there's no history because it's never been over $2,000 an ounce, it has to find its own resistance. It has to come to a price where long sell or, you know, governments that, you know, bought early, you know, sell from inventory, or just, you know, even speculative longs, they just sell. You can't sell that on the way up. You have to sell it on the way down. You have to sell a failure.
Well, what?
Otherwise, you just ride it.
Well, I'm going to grab a number here for you, David. And the number, I mean, as you know, I love numbers, but but how do you even get to the point where, let me see, it's here someplace. I'll find it. We'll talk about something else for a minute. It has to do with the, here we go, the dollar to gold ratio in 1913. Take a guess.
Dollar to gold.
How many dollars there were per ounce of gold that the U.S. government had?
I don't know. I wasn't close. Around, thank goodness, in 1930.
No, you weren't here. It was the year-over-year increase in money supply divided by the world production in gold. So the money supply increased by $29 for every ounce of gold that was increased. You know what it is now?
No idea.
32,000.
It actually, conceptually, though, if you think about it, figures, you know, because just even if we accepted the inflation rate and the, you know, money supply that they tell us, rather than what, you know, seems logical, you know, if you start compounding, it makes sense. It's a lot of years. It's 107 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you pick? I mean, do you have to go like? You just have to be in the spot. I mean, I would not have. We have, you know, a lot of people that have Apple, okay, at PTI and other places that I work with. The thing's up. I mean, it was a year ago, January. It was 100 and where did it trade? 157 or something.
Yeah. Now it's approaching $2 trillion in capitalization.
And now, and by all stretches, the last 18 months have been pretty horse bleep months. I don't think their earnings are up at all, are they?
This last quarter was good.
Okay, but
before that, the 4, 5, 6 quarters were, especially iPhone units themselves, services grew, you know, and there's some margin, you know, in that. I mean, they're not really in cloud, but they're, you know, music and their, you know, monthly thing, you know, I'll charge you $1 a month or I'm not going to update your iOS or whatever. Yeah, but it's not huge margin, but it's growing. But the iPhone, until this last quarter, was, like you said, horse bleep.
Yeah, well, but I'm saying, now the question is, and this is what we obviously want to do, David, we're seeing what's happening. Apple had this huge spike. A couple other stocks had this huge spike, and I've been in this gold and silver for a while, I've said 100 times now. All of a sudden now we get this blast in there. Because it's not like if the Fed's throwing money at the market, even though the averages, you know, the averages are the averages, it's never even. Now, how can you and I figure out, is it going to be the oil stocks? My guess is going to be some of these vaccine stocks, but I don't know. And they might already be in there. I mean, again, I'm not good at this. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, a lot of them. I mean, look, Moderna was $5, $10, stayed between 10 and 15 forever, and is now 75. So, yeah, they've been jacked up. If anybody that says, you know, anything, hey, I got something that, you know, in the test tube works or kills the virus in rats or produces antibodies, you know, some of these little tiny ones, you know, you'll see across the tape, there's a XYZ stock that's, you know, $6.92, up $3 for the day. It'd be 50% a day. And I don't play, you know, any penny stocks. I will not do that. So, but it's there.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, it's Kodak. What, it went from 2 to 60-something, and now it's back down to 15?
Yeah, but, I mean, talked about that.
But I mean, that would be clearly for anybody's clients or themselves. You'd love to have next week's, you know, favorite child, because there's enough money going on the market, but we're not going to get a day where every single stock is up 1%, right? There's going to be a few that are up 5 and a bunch that are unchanged. The trick is to figure out which ones that are the 5. And I don't know. I'm thinking these vaccine stocks have already had their run, David, because I don't know. How much money is in it?
Some yes, some no. The one I like there, and I do have a couple bullish spreads, full disclosure, is Regeneron. It just, you know, you look at, oh, it's $630, but they really have a tremendous pipeline, 20-some products, not just for COVID, and the stock sells for 20 times earnings. It's actually a laggard at $600 a share. But I think, you know, you go out and you do a, you know, $590, $600, you know, call spread for whatever, $6 to try and make four, a $10 spread. I think that's the one that still has room.
What, is Apple splitting now going to start somewhat of a trend? So for my clients and yours, we don't have to worry about a $630 stack?
Just because of the fractional share things that a lot of these, you know, online things are doing, you know, why do they need to? You know, what's the difference if you buy, you know, one share of Apple, you know, it, you know, the posted commission, or you buy 7 shares, you know, or 4 shares, or,
well, the difference,
you know, whatever.
Is, difference is, if you want to be able to hedge yourself with options, you need 100.
That's for us, but not for the people on Robinhood.
Well, that's probably true. So what do you think, David? If there is a turn down, what's going to cause it?
I vaccine's not working, number one. The calendar pushed out for therapeutics and or prophylactics. And I do think that, the market sooner or later will factor in if, and I'm not trying to make a political call, and I don't necessarily love either candidate, so I'm not siding, but if it really looks for sure like Biden's gonna win, then I think that the market's gonna have to factor in about a 7 or 8% decline in S&P earnings.
Just because of taxes?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And we talked about that. Instead of, 160 or $165 on the S&P, I think they're gonna have to factor in 150. And at 150, 152, what kind of multiple do you want to give? Even if you're generous and want to give 22 times earnings based on a rebound and a vaccine, it's still 32 to 3500 to me is low end is fair value, high end is overvalued.
Yeah, I would say that too. I am still stunned about the drop in GDP, and of course people are being the stab in the wound is the checks you're getting from the federal government, and yet I don't see how they keep doing it. I mean, if are we gonna pay all these teachers? Illinois doesn't have any money. Chicago doesn't have any money. I mean, are we thinking?
Well, they asked the Democrats are asking for billions for state bailouts. I don't know that they're going to get it, but they're trying.
Well, can you bail out everybody? Everybody forever?
As long as it's Illinois and Chicago, I'm fine.
Yeah, I guess. We have any individual? How much further are we going to go on this goal? Is there a sell anywhere in here?
No.
No, not really?
Just sold on the way down.
All right, David.
Silver, I think around 25, you can take a shot selling. You cannot sell gold.
All right, buddy. Talk to you on Monday. S&P futures unchanged. NASDAQ futures up 13. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.